Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today is trying to understand all of the dramatic geopolitical issues that are occurring, and we're only getting one side of the issue. We're getting the official narrative from different governmental agencies and the mainstream media, not just in the United States, but it's also true, if, for example, in France and Great Britain, Scotland, and other countries. So what is the truth concerning one particular issue, the Russian-Ukrainian crisis? Now, we're all familiar, and most Americans unfortunately support the idea that, well, this is one of those what Obama called the good wars, the ones we should fight. But he said the same thing about the wars that he helped precipitate or participated in, including in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, and also originally in the Ukrainian conflict and Honduras. So we're going to give you a different perspective. My guest in Athens, Greece, is Christoforo, and Alex, I should say, is the first name. And he, along with his colleague, have become an internationally recognized duet known as the Duran, a leading voice in the alternative media, and it was started in 2013. The Duran provides very eloquent analysis about crucial geopolitical issues such as the Russian-Ukraine conflict and the international order, events in China, the Middle East, and Africa, American, European economic and political developments, the deep insights about our very rapidly changing world. And many of our frequent guests on this program, like Ray McGovern, Dr. Jim Garrison, Scott Ritter, Professor Michael Hudson, among many, have acknowledged the Duran as being on the forefront of nonpartisan, objective geopolitical analysis of current events and how these events are shifting our perspectives about the strength and weaknesses underway within the global community. Alex comes from a diplomatic family in Cyprus, was educated in Canada, and has had a career in journalism with a focus on politics, economics, and technology. Alex and the Duran post upwards to 3 to 4 programs daily and can be found at theduran.locals.com. Their video commentaries can also be found on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. Nice to have you with us today.
Great to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Among the topics I would like us to explore, you have a special advantage of living outside the United States and yet are very knowledgeable about American history, economics, society, foreign policy. So as an outsider looking in, cutting through the average American's patriotic blindness or ideological boundaries, our mainstream media's manicured propaganda, how is the majority of the world outside of the European arena and several of U.S. other closest allies like Canada and Australia now evaluating American foreign policy and its motivations in contrast to China's and Russia's enormous successes to build a new multipolar world and this new geopolitical structure that is rapidly emerging will undoubtedly exclude the West from any of the policy or collaborative decision-making. And when I see clips of State Department Secretary Blinken or Victoria Nuland on their overseas diplomatic adventures, they're being reprimanded and returned home empty-handed frequently. It seems like more and more countries, largely from the global South and Middle East, are fed up with American demands and bullying and our hegemonic principles. We want your assets. We are going to get your assets. We're going to corrupt already frequently corrupted leading officials, and we're going to get what we need, or we'll have regime change. And we've saw that happening for the last 150 years. So now this new loose alliance, like the BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperative Organization, offers a fresh opportunity for these countries to better improve and develop their own self-interest and rather than bow to Washington, European influencers for endless exploitation. And this includes the growing momentum towards getting off the dollar and trade in their own currencies, national resources. So clearly there is a monumental paradigm, in my opinion, shifting right now, the international order, a new multipolar club, And as George Carlin said, we, meaning the United States as well as the United Kingdom, Europe, we ain't part of it. So please, in light of the recent talks between Putin and China's President Xi, China's brokering a reapproachment between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which could never happen under any American administration, now Russia's brokering reapproachment between Syria and Turkey, please give us your analysis. Take your time. There's no interruptions. The forum is yours.
Well, I think you're correct in many of the things that that you said, and in all of the things that you said. As Xi Jinping was leaving Moscow to go back to Beijing, Russian President Vladimir Putin actually walked him out to his car, personally walked him out to his car, and they were caught on hot mic. And Xi Jinping told Vladimir Putin, you know, my dear friend, and, you know, I'm going to be going now to Beijing. But he said, my dear friend, we are going to be seeing changes that we have not seen in 100 years. And I'm paraphrasing what he said. He said, we're going to be leading these changes. And I think that statement from Xi Jinping in that meeting between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, the first state visit from the Chinese leader when he got elected for a third time as president of China, he elected to go to Moscow. But that meeting was quite a shock for the leaders of the collective West, and even the media of the collective West. It seems like for the past year and a half, as they were celebrating their 10, 11th sanctions packages on Russia, believing that they were going to somehow collapse the Russian economy, they missed the entire narrative that was playing out. And that was a narrative of a multipolar world and de-dollarization, moving away from the U.S. dollar as reserve currency. And this was all self-inflicted. It didn't have to come to this. Putin, over the weekend, in an interview with Russian state media, he said that it's not Russia that doesn't want to use the dollar. It's just that the United States doesn't allow us to use the dollar, and so we're going to look elsewhere to trade and to do business. I mean, what would one expect from a country like Russia, that they would just hold their hands up high and surrender? Of course not. They're going to look for alternatives. And that's been the narrative of this conflict over the past year. It's been one where the collective West has sanctioned Russia more than any other country in history. And all of those sanctions have backfired, and they've done more harm to the United States and to Europe than they've done to Russia. As a matter of fact, it's actually helped Russia to remove itself from the neoliberal architecture and the neoliberal world order and financial system and economic architecture. And it's actually freed Russia now to move forward with China as they can alternate system. And a lot of countries, most of the global South, to be quite honest, are looking at this new alternative system. Let's call it the multipolar world, being led by Russia and China and BRICS. And they're saying, for the first time in many, many decades, we actually have options. Does it mean that we move away from cooperation with the United States or stop using the USD? No, but it does mean that countries now have the option to choose. And we're seeing a lot of countries starting to look at what China and Russia can offer them. And it's very attractive, because together, Russia and China can give everything to a country that the United States can give to that country without the lecturing, without the warnings, without the fear, without the regime change, without the color revolutions, without the neoliberal values, whatever those values are, because no one seems to understand exactly what this list of values that we keep on hearing about from people like Anthony Blinken or Joe Biden. We don't really know exactly what these values are. But you're seeing a lot of countries like Saudi Arabia, for example, saying, you know, this is not a bad deal what China and Russia can offer us. China has the manufacturing production capabilities that no one in the world has. China's manufacturing and production is actually bigger than that of the United States and the European Union combined. That's according to the Financial Times. And Russia has all the commodities any country can dream of, and they've got plenty of commodities for the entire planet. Whether you're looking at wheat, fertilizer, metals, uranium, oil, gas. John McCain would always make statements saying that Russia is nothing more than a gas station masquerading as a country. Well, Russia's a lot more than a gas station. It's almost like a commodities resources supermarket, and it's got everything that every country needs. And so this partnership between China, Russia, including BRICS, is a partnership that over the last year has now grown to a level where it can offer alternatives to what the collective West was offering countries around the world. And it can offer attractive alternatives without the lecturing and the restrictions and the fear that come with dealing with the United States, or specifically this Biden White House. And the fact that these sanctions have backfired on the Biden White House and on the European Union also has done a lot of damage to one of the weapons that the United States always turned to when they were applying pressure to a country, and that was sanctions. Russia has shown that you can weather the sanctions storm, you can come out the other end, and you may even be better for it. So it's even diminished the sanctions tool that I have to say the United States and now the European Union absolutely abused. And they abused it once again to their detriment. They took it to a point where they were kicking Russia out of SWIFT payment systems, messaging and payment systems. They were seizing foreign reserves and foreign assets. They restricted flights over European territory. They censored Russian media. They went to cancel Russian history and Russian culture. They used these sanctions to a level that, quite frankly, scared much of the world, because they realized that today it's Russia. Well, tomorrow it's me. It's my country. It's my assets. It's my foreign reserves sitting in a bank in Switzerland or sitting in a bank in New York City. And they started to take action, as any country would do. And they started to remove their funds. They started to diversify, and they started to band together and work together outside of the collective West to form their own trading blocks and their own cooperations, independent of the United States. And that's the situation that we're in. And it seems that over the past week, all of a sudden, the leaders of the collective West and much of the mainstream media, from Fox News to MSNBC to CNN, all of a sudden, they're saying, "Oh my God, these countries are moving out of the dollar. What's going on here? We're losing our status as reserve currency. Saudi Arabia is partnering with China and with Russia, and they've opened up diplomatic relations with Iran." And Turkey is going to start talking to Syria and to Assad. The Middle East, we've lost the Middle East. All of a sudden, they're realizing all of this. And this has been going on for the past year. And, you know, on the Duran, we just look at all the reporting that's coming out now. And we say, where were you guys Where were you guys when we were doing programs and we were telling the entire world, people that were watching our programs, we were telling them, this is going to backfire. This is not going to work out the way they think. They're not going to get regime change in Russia. They're not going to overthrow the government of Vladimir Putin. These are not sanctions being placed on a small, insignificant country. Obama, when he was president, and under his administration, they're the ones that that started the Maidan, and they're the ones that overthrew the democratically elected government of Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine. The Obama administration was responsible for the coup d'etat in Ukraine, but to his credit, when the war hawks were pushing Obama to start a conflict with Russia in Ukraine, Obama said that he would not go through with it because in that region, Russia had escalatory dominance, and it would be foolish for the United States to go down that path. He was right. Unfortunately, Joe Biden is completely obsessed with regime change in Russia and with the conflict in Ukraine, and it's tearing apart the collective West of the United States.
Alex, I appreciate that overview. I'm going to break down my concerns into several areas. Take any one of them that you wish to address afterwards, all right? I look at what the average person knows or doesn't know about the Russian-American conflict. And I ask the average American, when there's sanctions saying you can no longer trade with Poland, for example, and back in 2014, with that coup, where they, as you just mentioned, the Obama administration, guided by Victoria Nuland, who was Under Secretary of State under Hillary Clinton, they went in there and they made it happen. You know, they took no matter how corrupt any of these heads of state are, at least it was a democratically elected person, and we wanted our person in there because we wanted the resources. And let's face it, Ukraine has a lot of natural resources. It was considered the breadbasket of that area of the world for a long time. But, so you tell Russia, no more apples. Russia, okay, for a period of time. They have to go elsewhere. They have to go to Argentina, South Africa, to get their apples. But then they come up with an idea. We have more organic farm soil here than any other place in the world. And if you just took the farm area that is applicable in Russia, it is larger than the United States. You could put the United States in this farm area. That's how big it is. People are not aware of this, so they started creating their own orchards. But then anything that had been sanctioned, so the average Russian citizen couldn't get or had to pay a lot of money when they did, they started creating their own. So thousands of businesses and factories and orchards and all forms of agricultural investment went in. It took time, but now Russia produces more grains than any other country in the world. I mean, if you look at the Netherlands, unfortunately, what's happening there is terrible as well, with the Dutch government wanting to confiscate thousands of farms. But in Russia, they can feed not only their own country, a small population, which is about half the size, not about 40% the size of the United States, but they can feed a lot of people. They also have the largest amount of wood in the world. They have the largest boreal forest in the world. They have gold, oil. In fact, of the top 10 natural resources, five of the BRIC nations have the majority of those resources. And when you look at what China has, they have up to 90% of the essential minerals. So the Americans don't think before they hear one of the pundits like Mark, you know, let's put boots on the ground, let's go to a hot war with both Russia and China, even simultaneously. They've come up with this kind of stupidity. I'm saying, okay, and what has Russia not done that I'm aware of up to this point? And China has not done up to this point. They have not unleashed their cybersecurity mechanisms. And they have tens of thousands of people, scientists in China, for decades working on this alone. So, what if they had the capacity to turn off all the electricity? No airplanes, no ships, no cars, no stoplights, no no refrigeration, and also no nuclear power. Nuclear power only has about 1 week to 1 month maximum of fuel. What then starts to happen when no one anticipated it? And also your cell phone, your computer, your satellites, they have minerals that are necessary to be made, cobalt, lithium, and these BRIC nations control that. They have up to 90%. So what are you going to do then when you start becoming the country that no longer has resources? And right now in the United States, and I don't know if you're aware of this, Alex, but when I go to place an order for organic items, I'm lucky to get 60 to 70%. In some cases, up to 50% are no longer available. Now, this is from the largest wholesale organic distributor in the United States. And I've seen this going on for the last 3 years. And this is now considered normal. Oh, well, they're out of that and they're out of that. Why are they out of it? Well, because of all the problems caused over the last 3 years, farms have gone bankrupt around the world, suppliers have dried up, and now with high inflation and high interest rates, a lot of people can't stay in business. But if you're the average person, you can always find some store to buy your groceries and some store to buy your linens or some place to buy a car. So you're not looking at the larger picture. You're monotheistic. You're just looking at yourself. So I'm saying a big problem we have facing us, and really facing us if we go to war with any of these countries in the actual sense, not proxy wars, they could do two things. They could dry up supplies to us, especially with their member nations. Now, how many people are interested in joining BRICS? The latest figure I had was 19. And how many more could join BRICS based upon their co-development of the Great Silk Road, which China is going to spend somewhere upwards of $16 trillion over the next 10 years on? That's about 69, and it could be more since I saw. So that means that the BRICS nation, which is now going to bring in Saudi Arabia, Argentina, and other countries, the United Arab Emirates, well, then look at all your partners. You will control more of the world's supplying to the populations than the United States and Europe combined by a major source. Well, what would that do when you're guaranteeing and backing up your mixed currencies with gold? Well, the United States actually has 15,000 tons of gold, which is the most in the world, but you would never know that. China and Russia have around 1,900 plus tons of gold. So they've got hundreds of billions and a few trillion. The United States has a lot of trillions, but they're not backing any of that up with gold. They went off the gold standard. So they have a fiat currency. Now, separate stage two. So when those groups of people get together, what is China doing? It's building factories. It's building gigantic malls. The largest mall in the world is in Iran with 10 to 12,000 kiosks in one building. How in the world do you do that? Saudi Arabia is building this new city, which will be the most advanced city in the world, a smart city in the middle of the desert, right to a port, and using seawater and to fuel all this for electricity. And they're doing this at a rapid speed. Now, China, from beginning to end, and I double-checked this, can build a 40-story skyscraper from beginning, when they break dirt, to finishing in 11 to 14 days. In the United States, it can take up to 4 years to build the same building because of permitting and requirements, etc. So if China is able to go into countries and build high-speed rails, we have no high-speed rail in the United States. California spent $7+ billion and have nothing to show for it, a little bit of track and nothing. And here they can build the world's longest high-speed rail going into the Tibet. Now, that's separate from what I believe is wrong with China about the Uyghurs and the internment camps and organ harvesting from the Falun Gong and taking over Tibet and changing its culture and burning over 50,000 monasteries. That's a separate issue. That's why I don't trust them. I don't like them. I'm merely using this as an example of what they're capable of doing to gain friends and influence by showing, here's what we can do for you. Of course, there's a price to that, but they're not charging the people up front. So now they've got friends galore because the countries are getting something in Africa, getting something out of their military bases and hegemonic principles. So I'm very concerned that the average American is unaware that this unity is occurring, this cooperation is occurring. And now you got the U.S. dollar, the Canadian dollar, the Swiss franc, the Italian, you got the English pound, and you got the euro, and you got the Japanese yen, a mixed currency. Well, what do you think is going to happen the day that you see on Wall Street and through Financial Times or other publications that the BRICS nations in a year or two or three suddenly has 60 to 70% of the world's trade, and they're guaranteeing it with gold backing it up, and they're not just building armaments, they're building structures, infrastructures, hospitals, schools, etc., in the countries? The dollar will collapse overnight, and within hours, you'll wake up and you'll see 20 to 30% gone out of Wall Street. You'll see us go from like 31,000 now down to probably 12,000. You'll see about $20 trillion eliminated. You'll see banks collapse, and you'll see the derivatives, $100 trillion derivative in each of the five largest banks, totaling about between $550 and $600 trillion, all in that bank in, and now our entire banking system collapses. So I see that we are playing with an extraordinarily dangerous situation, and we seem clueless about any of this. So could you address the fact that this cooperative could have devastating effects upon the dollar? Because everything in America is pegged to the dollar, our real estate, the dollar, everything, all of our investments, the dollar. You collapse the dollar, you've collapsed the industries behind it, and we will see something we've never seen in the world before in the collapse of our economy. Those are just my own subjective thoughts. I'd like your input, please.
Well, I mean, the entire collective West, the United States, Wall Street, the City of London, I mean, you're talking about an economic system that at one point in time was based on manufacturing and on building things, building tangible things. It's not that anymore. It's an economy that is built on that does operate on a financial level. It's as you said, it works with derivatives and stocks and various different services, but it doesn't. It's not rooted in actual production, and it's not rooted in commodities and production. It's a different model than that of what Russia and China is offering. You know, Russia and China are going to offer things, tangible things, to not only to their own citizens, but to the entire world that they're going to do business with. And this is the big difference that we're going to see going forward. And it doesn't take much to realize that when you have China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and India, South Africa, in one organization, you get to understand that the countries that are really isolated in this new world going forward is going to be the collective West. It's going to be the United States, Canada, and especially Europe. Europe is going to be the hardest hit out of all of this, because these countries that are now forming and that have been forced together in a way, they're the ones that control the resources. And these are the countries that the United States, at the Biden White House, for lack of a better word, they freak these countries out. The actions that they took against Russia, with the sanctions that they placed against Russia, brought so many of these other countries that are producing these commodities, like Saudi Arabia, brought them to a point where they said, if we don't break away from this out-of-control system that the United States is offering, then we're going to be next on the target list. And you saw that with the sanctions against the price caps against oil that they placed on Russia. So they got the G7 together, and they got the European Union together, and they decided to place a price cap on oil. And this price cap was only going to be placed on Russia. Well, you know, Russia said, wait a minute. Who are you to dictate your prices to us? We're the ones that produce this stuff. We're the ones that are trading this stuff. We're not going to just sit back and accept a price cap on a commodity that we're a major player in. And Russia is part of OPEC Plus. And so Russia, they call up the members of OPEC Plus, mainly Saudi Arabia. And they say, look at what these guys are trying to do. They're trying to muscle in on our cartel, on our domain. Now, if Saudi Arabia was to let, and Russia and all of the OPEC members, if they were to let the G7 and the EU dictate the price of oil to them, to the people that are producing it, well, it's game over for Saudi Arabia. It's game over for Russia. It's game over for the UAE. Or all the members of OPEC. Of course they're not going to put up with it. And so Russia said no. Saudi Arabia understood the trajectory of things. And here we are. Saudi Arabia, Iran, Russia, and dozens of other countries now waiting to get into BRICS to form a different system. A system where they're not going to have to deal with this type of blackmailing, which is what it is. Because behind all of this, behind the threats and the warnings and the price caps, is the threat of the U.S. military. That's what anchors this constant lecturing and warning that comes to these countries. It's anchored in the might of the U.S. military. If you don't do what we say, well then, you know, you're going to be in trouble. They don't have that problem with Russia and China. And they can also get the protection of Russia and China. So, I mean, it's, you know, everything you said is exactly spot on. There's a lot of people that aren't understanding where we're going. But just take the case of three countries, Russia, Iran, and Saudi Arabia. And take the case of the oil price caps and how the Biden White House ignored the suggestion of many of the experts, and they went ahead and decided to place a price cap on oil, thinking that their threats, that their warning, and the fact that the U.S. military oil that OPEC is controlling, and it completely backfired. It completely backfired, and it pushed the OPEC countries now to seek a different system because they understand that you just can't deal with the United States as a good faith partner. It just can't happen. And so here we are. And this is, you know, this once the dollar goes and it's not the reserve currency or it's one of many different currencies, it's going to be a huge shift for how everyday American citizens are going to be living their lives. It's going to be a huge shift. It's going to be a huge shift in how the American government spends its money. There's going to be no more $120 billion in money given to Ukraine. That's gone. That's going to evaporate. There's going to be no more 800 U.S. military bases around the world. The U.S. government is going to have to learn to live within its means. And it's going to be a big shift. Alex, I personally believe...
Yes. You just mentioned something I'd like for you to go in a little depth on, please. Right now, when we hear about Ukraine, we hear about how the Ukrainians are mounting a counteroffensive and they're winning, they're killing the Russians in large numbers. We don't hear the truth. Could you give us an update on, at least to the best that you're aware of, what is the status of this conflict?
Well, the truth is that Ukraine is losing, and they're losing very bad. And it doesn't have to be like this. What Ukraine needs to do is they need to get to the peace table. They need to negotiate some sort of peace, because what is happening right now to the Ukraine military is that it's getting ground down by the Russian forces. And it's not even the Russian military that is doing it. It's the paid mercenary organization known as Wagner. This PMC group, which is a type of of subsidiary of the main Russian military, but also acts independent. It's kind of like the French Foreign Legion. This group is single-handedly grinding down whatever is left of the Ukraine military, and they're doing this in about 2-3 areas of East Ukraine, primarily in the area known as Bakhmut, and also in the southern area known as Avdiivka. The Russian military is using their superiority in artillery, in weapons, and in weapon production to just erase and annihilate the third Ukraine army that the Russians have now destroyed in this one-year conflict. You see, the media in the West is not going to tell you that Russia, they have already gone through three Ukraine militaries. They're now on their third. The first Ukraine military that they defeated was at the beginning of the war. And this was the Ukraine military that was trained by NATO, but was using the Soviet-era weapons that they had in stock. And that was the military that the Russians first encountered. And that was the military that they initially destroyed. That was pretty much the fighting in and around, let's say, Mariupol. And they destroyed that military. They destroyed their weapons. They ran out of weapons. What does the Biden White House do? It says we need to get more weapons and more money to Ukraine and get more recruits in there. So they get all the countries of Europe and the EU, and these countries in Europe and the European Union, specifically the Eastern European Union states, they give all of their Soviet weapon stockpiles to this newly trained Ukraine military. Russia grinds that military down. Now we're on the third iteration, and this is a Ukraine military. Once again, another conscription, more recruits. And this military has been trained to use NATO weapons. And Russia has demilitarized much of this army as well. And we're starting to see the European Union and the United States now having problems providing the artillery and the ammunition for this military from their own stockpiles, to NATO standards. This is the equipment that NATO uses. And they're having trouble arming this military because the Russians are just outproducing the Ukraine military and NATO in weapons manufacturing. The United States and the European Union, for 3 months, they were going back and forth about getting NATO tanks to Ukraine. And they finally agreed to get something like around 380, 400 tanks, Leopard tanks, Challenger. They even talk about Abrams sometime next year. But they're going to put together 400 tanks, and they're going to get them to Ukraine so Ukraine can mount this big spring counteroffensive that they're talking about over and over again, which I believe will happen. Putin, in an interview just yesterday, said that Russia produces three times that amount of tanks in a year, in a single year. He also said that whatever ammunition the European Union and the U.S. produces, the 155-millimeter ammunition, Russia produces three times that amount. Whatever you produce, he said, we produce three times more. And that's without China. That's without China. That's why the U.S. is so afraid of China getting involved, because if the Russians actually went to China and said, can you produce 155-millimeter ammunition, China would produce more ammunition than the U.S., the EU, combined over 20 years could possibly produce. You see, this is a war that Ukraine and NATO cannot win. They cannot win. I go back to what Obama said. When it comes to this region and this type of war, this type of land war, this artillery war, this war of attrition, Russia has escalatory dominance. And the narrative that Russian soldiers are being ground down by the Ukraine military is nonsense. It's a lie. Are Russian soldiers dying? The Wagner Group soldiers, are they dying? Yes. Are Ukrainians dying in larger numbers? Absolutely. It's ridiculous to believe that Russia, which has a 10-to-1 advantage in artillery, is losing 8 men to Ukraine's 1. It's fiction. The media's own narrative is inverted. It's upside down. It doesn't take much to pick it apart. When you have CNN and when you have Fox News or New York Times, Washington Post coming out and saying that Ukraine is outgunned 10-to-1 by Russia, and then in the same article they say that that for every Ukraine soldier that dies, 10 Russian soldiers die. How is that possible? It's not possible. It's not happening. What's happening is that Russia is grinding down the Ukraine military, that has been funded and trained by NATO, by the United States, and built up over 8-9 years for the sole purpose of going to war with Russia and causing some sort of regime change in the Russian Federation. Ukraine is being used. The Ukraine military is being used. The people of Ukraine are being used as a proxy. That is exactly what is happening in this conflict. The country of Ukraine is being ground down. It's being systematically destroyed. And not by Russia, by the West, because the West refuses to sit down and negotiate. What does Russia want? What has it always wanted for the last 8 years? It's very simple. They want Ukraine to say they're going to stay neutral. They're not going to get involved in NATO. It's that simple. Is that such a difficult ask? Is that such a crazy thing for Russia to have asked? But they refuse to do it. And they refuse to do it on the orders of the White House. And here we are today. And this is the tragedy of the situation. This is not turning out well at all for the Biden White House, but they don't have a reverse gear. They can't extract themselves from this. Meanwhile, they're losing the U.S. dollar. They're losing their influence in the Middle East. They've lost their influence in Africa. They've lost their influence in South America. Because they've become so singularly obsessed with some sort of regime change in Russia and using Ukraine to achieve that regime change, are we going to get a spring offensive? Yeah, I believe we'll get a spring offensive. That's what I believe. What will the spring offensive do? No one has defined it. Some people say it's a spring offensive to invade Crimea. This is ridiculous talk. You see, Russia will also trade territory. Russia doesn't have a problem with giving up territory back and forth in Ukraine because their goal is not to take territory at this stage. Their goal is to demilitarize Ukraine. It's not to march all the way to Kiev or all the way to Lviv at this moment. Their goal right now is to remove the army, to destroy the military, the opponent's military. That's their goal. And if the military comes to them, even better. This is the way the Russians see things. Why should we go chasing them when they're just coming straight to us in Bakhmut and in Avdiivka? We don't have to go anywhere. We can just sit there, sit back. They keep on throwing more men towards us, and we hit them with our artillery. And they've got plenty of artillery. For the last year, we've been hearing the media and the collective West talk about Russia's running out of weapons. They're running out of weapons. Where are they running out of weapons? They're not. And the Russians have said as much. And they've told the U.S., they said, we're not running out of weapons, guys. Our factories are running round the clock, and they've been doing so for the past 10 years. Russians know how to make weapons. They're very good at weapons production. Their economy is geared towards this.
Also, the Russian Air Force long ago could have decimated Kiev, and they chose not to. And that should be a sign that they're not wanting to destroy the entire country. No. As you said, they're wanting to take out their military and allow a ceasefire, which probably will be brokered by China at some point, exactly. Maybe in the late summer, early fall, when it's known at that point that they can't go any further in this war. One last quick question. I recently saw a clip of World Economic Forum's founder, Klaus Schwab, speaking at the recent G20 meeting held in India. And as many of our listeners know, Schwab is one of the masterminds behind the Great Reset, which would essentially transform our Western civilization into a technologically driven dystopia, whereby humans will serve technological innovation rather than vice versa. This is something the great French sociologist Jacques Ellul warned about in the early 1960s in his book El Technique. So watching Schwab, it became clear, at least to me, that not all is well and dandy with World Economic Forum. Countries and people are beginning to protest, and clearly the progress being made by China, India, and Russia to shift large segments of the international community towards this new multipolar model is a growing threat towards the World Economic Forum's vision of unipolar world governed by a cherry-picked stakeholders like BlackRock and the other owners of the primary equity owners in the Berkshire Hathaway and State Street and Vanguard, etc., which collectively have about somewhere around $35 to $40 trillion in assets and mainly in owning stock and corporations. So watching Schwab, it became clear to me that something is changing, and because their message is getting more radical, and their spokesperson, Dr. Harari, or Professor Harari, this guy, in my opinion, whoa. He is yeah. The most insecure, insensitive person talking about people being worthless and useless. And he didn't walk it back, and he wasn't booed. He wasn't told, no, human beings are not worthless and useless because they're not stakeholders and rich and powerful. So Schwab looked worried, speaking to an audience where the majority likely viewed the World Economic Forum agenda with suspicion. He also didn't have his usual animated enthusiasm and joyful demeanor. And commentators opposing the Great Reset are often quick to say that it is aligned with Chinese policy. However, President Cheng himself stated during the 2021 virtual Davos meeting that he supports multilateralism and opposes the World Economic Forum agenda with one nation or one group of nations imposing their will upon the whole world. And so what do you make of this now, since you've got Boris Johnson, Macron, Justin Trudeau, Mark Rutte, and the heads of New Zealand, Australia, and Sweden are, in my opinion, they're crashing and burning as far as their credibility, and they put themselves out there thinking that all was going to go well, and it hasn't and won't. Your final thoughts, please.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Boris Johnson was saying that we're going to get regime change in Russia, and, you know, he was escorted out of 10 Downing Street, you know, Jacinda Ardern of New Zealand. She resigned as prime minister because the job just simply got too hard, in her words, as did Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland. She said the job just got simply too hard. The UK has gone through three prime ministers in 1 month, and now they're on Rishi Sunak, who's just another unelected globalist student of the school of Klaus Schwab. Macron has these protests in France, which is pretty much all of France out on the streets protesting his pension reform. You know, their globalist world is not crumbling. It has failed. It has failed. You can't have this one world globalist system without China and without Russia on board. And I won't even take China. You can't have this system without Russia on board. And once again, you look at a map and you see the size of Russia, and it's crystal clear. It doesn't work unless you have Russia playing along with Klaus Schwab's ideas and his philosophy of this great reset. And Russia's out. Russia's out. They're not going to get a change in the government. They're not going to get the regime change they want at the Kremlin. They're not going to get new leadership, which will realign with the WEF's policies and goals. And they're out of the system. And they're doing well out of the system. Their economy, according to the IMF, an institution that's not favorable towards Russia, their economy is going to be growing in 2023. Russia's inflation rate is lower than that of Germany and the United States. First time in a long time.
And he has over an 82%. He has an 82% favorable.
And he has an 82% favorable. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
they're not going to throw him out.
You know, Klaus Schwab. What I think they're going to do, the WEF, I think their power has been greatly diminished. But if I were to take a guess, I would think that they're going to work along the philosophy of, if we can't control the world, then at least let us control the Western world. And I think that's where they're going to retreat towards.
Yeah, they're going to balkanize the issue. Well, we're out of time.
Exactly.
I want to thank you so much, Alex, for coming on and sharing your deep insights. And I hope my audience appreciates the power of the free voices, the nonpartisan voices of the Durand. Go to the durand.locals.com. And they're doing 3 to 4 programs a day. And I look forward to another conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
My guests from Athens, Greece, Alex Christoforo, and he and his partner have done a magnificent job. They're modern day heroes, in my opinion. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening today, and have a nice day.